Public hearing, possible work session on House Bill 5053, the Oregon Department of Transportation. Ms. Jordan, do you have any comments to make before we begin? Okay. Mike Marsh and Doug Kendall, you're going to give us an overview of the zero-based budgeting?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. Appreciate your time. We're coming back at you after a little hiatus. We'd like to do the zero-based budget discussion for the maintenance program, and we'll give it over to Doug Kendall.
Thank you. Chair Hannon, member of the committee, Doug Kendall, maintenance engineer for the Oregon Department of Transportation. When we last were here, we left with a couple of questions, which I intend to answer as I go throughout the presentation this morning. I think it's going to be most effective if I kind of weave them into my presentation, and I've got plenty of material sitting around on the floor, so I hope that we'll be able to answer whichever question you'd like to have answered today. But let me start with this. Chair Hannon, you ask the difference between zero-based budgeting and the current method of budgeting. And I tried to do a thing down the middle of the page and see this and see this, and I couldn't do it. And the reason is there's two different premises. In the way we budget now, we take the features, was one of the questions. We take the features, which are listed here. For all, this is all of the various features that correspond to the activities that we perform in the state. And we multiply those by the quantity standard, which is a short document. I didn't bring copies of these because of the bulk. It tells you how many times you do maintenance on each feature each year. And a feature would be a mile of ditch, a mile of pavement, the number of signs, any of those kinds of number of culverts. Those are all features. Then you take that and multiply it by the bottom part of this, which is what's called the crew day standards. And this tells you, so I know I have a certain number of features. I know that I have to perform maintenance on those features so many times each year. And here are my costs for each time I perform maintenance on those features. And that's how the budget is built. It's what's called a features-based or quantity standard-based budget. It's the most commonly used type of budgeting in the United States for maintenance. This kind of budget came about in the late or mid-70s in almost every state has so used.
What happens when you're either over on your estimate or under on your estimate? Then do you move money from other maintenance accounts to backfill or take away and use somewhere else?
Chair Hannon, once the budget gets built, then you come to the process of work planning within that budget and through your district manager who is making adjustments throughout the year to figure out how to stay within the budget that's been set for them. So, and then you also have to react to whatever's happening on the roadway. So there are adjustments made continually throughout. When we get down towards the end of the year, we look statewide to see if we need to rebalance across the district statewide if there's an imbalance, if somebody's had a very... In fact, we did it a little bit this year with the heavy snow. We moved some money into particularly the Portland area, but the Path area has had a lot of snow problems. Zero-based budgeting, on the other hand, as near as I can tell, it attempts to prioritize programs, and you stack on so each individual program as you start from the bottom. Well, the problem that I had in trying to describe what the difference was between our current budget, features-based, and zero-based budget has to do with the legal obligation for maintenance, because you start out in zero-based budgeting, you list legal requirements and critical needs. And the issue for maintenance is this. We have a state highway system, which, and I've got in the handout I'm going to give you in a second, I've got the sites that route you down into the fact that we have to maintain the state highway system. And we don't have the option of closing roads. If you all came to me and you said, Doug, if you had the games wide open, you do whatever you want, what would you do if we told you you had to cut your staff by 20%? What I would do with no other guidance is I would post roads as this road no longer maintained, travel at your own risk. But I don't have that option. I have to maintain the system that I've got. So that's one of the things that's giving me some difficulty in doing a true zero-based budget starting at zero and going up by 5% increments. I, in fact, can't keep the road open in a safe condition unless I'm up, start up at about 79%, I think. So what I've done is, in response to the question, is I've got this document that I'll hand out that talks about the impact. And if we can walk through that, I hope this gets the answer to the questions we're looking for. It's what I've done here is I've gone through and I've said, okay, if you go to the first step, what we've said is the legal minimum. You go to the first step of the budget. It's 79% of the request. Here's what's going to happen. I'm just going to walk through these things, and if you all get bored or have questions, please ask. The first part of this discussion is simply saying that the site that where I came to the conclusion that the legal minimum is to keep all roads open and in a safe condition. In the last paragraph of that opening section talks about the I'm touching the reductions that we're making here is our ability to respond to emergencies. Our radio system, fleet, budget for emergency maintenance are kept intact so roads can be reopened when catastrophic failure occurs. If we go below 79%, then we're going to reduce our ability to respond to emergencies. And I think this is graphically, I can illustrate this in two ways. One is during the floods in 96, 97, well, in the two sets of winter floods, we had all roads closed over 200 places one time or another, for some reason or another. And the longest we went, I think, was 1 week before we got it opening, with the exception of the Estacada, the road, the Clackamas Highway above Estacada, which was damaged so severely we couldn't get it reopened. But most roads were reopened within a week. Most roads, actually, most of those 200 instances were reopened within 24 hours. If you contrast that to some other roads, Portland, Burnside and Portland, for instance, or I guess the other contrast that I can draw is if you drive around this town, you will see roads that are, it'll stay closed. May 22nd to October 1st, closed. They're going to replace the culvert or something. We don't have that luxury with state highways. We carry 60% of the traffic. We can't simply just decide we're going to close the state highway and work on it later. So those are some distinctions that I might give you and why we've kept our budget intact to respond to emergencies.
Can you define maintenance? What is your definition of year?
Maintenance is keeping... Let me read the definition of maintenance. Basically, I will paraphrase this. Maintenance is keeping the things that are out there in place, intact and in place. We're not necessarily after improving them. We're after keeping what's out there functional.
So why do the bridge abutment back... doing asphalt overlay, that would be all the fund is needed.
I think that there's a variety of things that enter into whether it's maintenance or whether it's done under one of our preservation program. Asphalt overlays would be the contract, the large contract, like the overlay on Interstate 5. That comes out of our preservation program. Our maintenance program is generally, maybe clarify that a little bit, we're more reactive, so we're going to react to a situation that's out there. So when we're going in, when maintenance is going in and paving, we do one of three things. We're either pothole patching, sealing, putting down some protective, which is not necessarily reactive, but it's something to keep the surface in good condition. Or we're doing some short sections of patching, blade patches or roller patches. That's in the maintenance program. In the preservation program, you're doing large amounts of paving. So whether it's paving in maintenance or out of maintenance, yes and no. It's in both maintenance and in preservation.
Okay. Doug, I think this is part of the problem that
your experience with the Senate Transportation Committee and trying to get to the crux of the issue. When is it divine maintenance? When is it divine preservation? When is it divine deconstruction? And I think this is part of the frustration that's been expressed to me by other members of the Senate, that it's like trying to grab a moving ball all the time, and it's hard to get your hands around the ball and say, this is what the fund is. Now, what we did was to take two specific areas, maintenance and service, to zero-based budget. What we'd like to do is have you participate in that. We understand your reluctance and your concerns with how do you get down to zero base and then how do you build the instruments back up. But part of the dilemma and the problem is there's additional legislation that's working itself through the system that says you all have a cost accounting system. Well, the cost accounting system is totally different from zero-based budgeting. Zero-based budgeting is different than maintenance, preservation, and new construction. I guess what I'm asking you and Mike is to help us find a method to get to the numbers so that I can get a synopsis of the budget report and know that there's X amount of dollars remaining for this biennium. When I look at that figure in your account, if I need to approach you and say, Doug, we got this unique problem in Southern Oregon, it really needs tending to now. It can't wait till the next biennium. It can't wait till the next budget cycle. It needs to be dealt with now. I want to give you the greatest amount of flexibility, but I also want to call into question the greatest amount of accountability. And this is part of the frustration that some of my colleagues have expressed to me on the Senate side is, how can you justify an increase in gas tax or vehicle tax or getting away from fuel tax unless you know pretty much how the money is being spent now? Kind of like we appropriate it in a lump sum and then it's broken out by the agency to spend. And so I'm not trying to put you down here this morning. I'm trying to say, how can you help us rebuild the system so that members can look at it and understand what all the numbers mean rather than being turned off? Now, maybe the committee members have a different perspective on that, but I think that's where part of the frustration has been driving all session, is that you look at numbers and they don't mean anything because they all just kind of blend together in some manner, and they don't stand out and separate themselves and say, give us this amount of money and we can do this. Give us this amount of money, we can do this. Give us this amount of money, we can do that.
Okay.
Representative Butler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Doug is correct in indicating that maintenance is something very difficult to have a zero-based budget upon. The zero-based budgets perhaps would be more meaningful and of more utility to us if it were applied on construction. I think you tried to get to the core of that as you asked what the definition of maintenance was. And it should be different than the definition of construction.
Yeah, I feel like I'm grabbing a balloon. And every time I get a hold of it, then the air rushes over here. And so everybody, you know, I've really felt very frustrated by my colleagues who have asked me to be the intercessory, so to speak, to get them the numbers so that they can make an informed decision. And it's not an attempt to bash ODOT. It's not an attempt to take away your management ability, but it is a sensitive to say, what is the project run and how much do they need? And maybe they can postpone that kind of maintenance and move it over here to something else. I don't know.
Okay.
But I think I'm hopefully trying to express to you part of the frustration of some of my colleagues.
Okay.
It's very good for you to kind of go through answering the chair's question. I just want to make sure that those definitions are clear. Those members that have the program budget, looks like this. On page 6 of that budget is the sources and uses of funds, which is a chart that looks like this. On the second page of that is some brief definitions that I think help a little bit to make sure we're tracking. So, again, page 6 has the charts. Page 7 has the definitions. And that, under that area, it says maintenance. As Doug was mentioning, maintenance is repairing existing highways, but he used the analogy to make sure we're clear. That's like patching pieces of your roof, and they're doing the pothole patching. They're not doing a whole replacement of the roof. They're doing pothole patching or pieces of it. Preservation is listed as paving, striping, and reconstruction to add useful life to existing highways. So that's the concept of replacing the entire roof on your house. It's major work. It's going like he was talking about the Woodburn 20-mile strip there. That's preservation, so it's major replacement. And modernization is when you're adding capacity or putting in an extra lane. You can add extra capacity to the highway, putting in an interchange that allows for additional response to congestion, a new bypass, that type of thing, which is adding capacity to the system. So again, the three are maintenance when you're talking just about the pothole patching repair of small pieces around the state. Second are preservation, which is a major replacement to add useful life. And third is modernization, which adds capacity or extra lanes, things that really change the nature of the section of road instead of just putting on an overlay. I just want to make sure those pieces are clear, because I think there has been a lot of confusion in various committees about what those terms mean and what we're trying to address. And I know Doug has some ideas about going through the maintenance piece to talk about what we actually do there. It may respond to the chair's question.
Okay, if I could ask you, Mike, I think that's been part of the problem in the Senate and particularly in the transportation that's going on in the House and it's going on here, is that nobody has been able to define what is zero-based budget, what do we want to achieve. And I guess we're looking for you directions so that I can pick up a document and know Region 3 is going to spend X amount of dollars on maintenance. Region 5 is going to spend X amount of dollars on maintenance. If they come in under budget and Region 3 needs the money more than Region 5, we get a little bit of money. I mean, these are the things that would be helpful. So you can start over here and show a trail on how you reach decisions. I think that's part of the frustration that some of my colleagues have expressed, is not that they're anti-ODOT, that they're just having a difficult personal time dealing with numbers, trying to grasp where the numbers are and where they should be. So as we go through this presentation over the next couple of days, I hope that you're able to speak in layman's terms. Don't speak in the acronyms that the agency is effectively using. Speak in layman's terms so we can start this dialogue and so we can really, not to micromanage it, but to understand what we're talking about when we say, well, you put in new guardrail and you widen the bridge abutment out, that's preservation. But if you do an asphalt overlay, that's maintenance. It's just hard to get your hand around this bloom without the air creeping somewhere else. So I'm not trying to put you guys down this morning, but I guess I'm frustrated in what do we want to know and how much do we want to know. And I need to take back some package to my colleagues that says we finally have got a handle on how much money is coming in, how much money is being allocated and budgeted for different functions, and how much is actually going out.
What should be? Oh, okay. Senator, I think I understand the frustration. when maybe the first question you ask me is, when you're paving, is that maintenance or is that preservation? When you drive by a job where you're putting down paving or putting down asphalt, it could be any one of the three. It could be preservation, modernization, it could be safety project. It is kind of an internal deal as to what goes into maintenance. We've tried to cast the budget in a sense of what meets what House Bill 2478 wants to do and what the budget note from last year tried to do, and that is that, you know, we've tried to characterize it in terms of programs. And what I hear you saying is that we don't have a good enough feeling yet around what those programs contain in them, that it's still confusing about what's maintenance and what's modernization, what's preservation. So
I guess where I'm coming from is that I could drive from here to Medford on I-5. I could see preservation, I could see maintenance, and I could see modernization. And still not know which is one of the three areas.
Right.
And I think what I'm trying to ask you is part of my colleagues who show us a delineation between the three so that we have some means of tracking. It's just like some of the traffic issues. I don't know, Highway 18, I see somebody else, two people died over the weekend. Dangerous stretch of road. So is it maintenance when you pave it? Is it modernization if you added a lane? Is it, there's got to be some way we can look at some of these numbers and get an answer, because all we're getting right now is, yes, it's on the 6-year plan, and all we know is that 6-year plans are set to change depending on the priorities.
Okay. Well, what I can do, at least today, from working from this document that I gave to the efficiency committee, and Senator, I guess my thinking is that to answer the question that you're asking is we'll go through and explain what's in maintenance, and then that stuff is not in the other programs. And so if this turns out to be helpful, that'll give us some guidance as far as, you know, how to proceed with describing what's in preservation. So if I can...
Could I ask you real quick before you get that started? When you define maintenance, is there certain levels of maintenance? Level one, the road is deteriorating 40%. Level two, the road is deteriorating 60%. Level three or something, to prioritize the levels of maintenance that you concentrate on.
Senator Hanna, we are doing that right now. It's a new technique. In fact, when the dye management people were here, they thought we were, if not leading the country, we were certainly with the leaders in the country in defining conditions of each one of these groups, so that you have and by these groups I mean surface maintenance, drainage, traffic services, those things. So we are still putting that together in terms of being able to rate and judge quantitatively rather than subjectively, but objectively, what is the condition of a roadway in terms of maintenance? How are the features being maintained? And that's a work in progress. It's not complete yet. We think it's going to be a very good tool that hopefully in the next session I'll be able to come to you and say, here's a picture of a road in condition three from a maintenance perspective, a picture of a feature in condition three. So we're working on that. We do not have it today.
And what's your time frame to develop something?
I'm going to try. We've been through a draft of an evaluation process, and I'm going to try and have the pictures put to that for this fall. We're going to try and do a rating in the fall, and then the idea is to see if we can find a correlation between our objective rating and the customer surveys that we do for maintenance to see if we're, that we're, if our maintenance, we're judging maintenance correctly and saying that yes, this is adequate, are the customers. So my intention is to have that done this fall.
And Mr. Chair, while Doug's transitioning to his presentation, I want to make sure it's clear that we do have, for the preservation work and for the overall condition of pavement, we do have
yes,
poor, fair, good, and very good conditions, which are on national standard, which are used on a significant basis to determine how what the condition of a roadway is, what the condition of the pavement is. But his focus right now is on maintenance and being able to say within maintenance for all the features that they have, each one of those features is similarly evaluated to determine how it's doing as compared to the overall condition of the roadway.
But as I understood, Doug is also saying that trying to zero-base budget on maintenance is kind of like trying to chase a moving target.
Senator Hammond, I guess as long as you, as long as the presumption is that we have to keep all the roadways open and that they have to be safe for travel, yes, that's a correct characterization. It's a difficult thing then to break it down into 5%. I can. It's easier for me to start where I'm at and back down and tell you what the results are going to be than it is to start at the bottom because I've got to make such a huge jump just to keep the roads open.
Okay.
So let's go through this thing. I will try and do this relatively quickly. It took 3 hours when I did it for the efficiency committee, but I'll see if we can speed that up. I think Mike's characterization of the house, the roof on the house, is very good. I often liken it to a fence. If you have a fence that you lose a board out of, and you go put that board back up, that's maintenance. If you go out and paint that fence, or you maybe you replace the post, maybe you're, or let's not say replace the post, but if you go out there and paint it, or you're keeping it in shape, you put in another board to strengthen it or something, that's kind of preservation. And if you take it down and put up a brand new fence, a chain link fence or something, that's modernization. So we're talking about the maintenance portion, the things that keep what's out there and in a serviceable and safe condition. Here's kind of the line you asked for, the third bullet down, Senator, is highway maintenance tries to maintain the highway and surroundings as they were constructed, not to improve them. And we do, in some cases, put in a right turn refuge or something if we see a real safety problem that we can go out and throw something together. But generally, that's a very, very, very small portion. And generally, that we're improving what's out there. And also, maintenance is primarily a reaction to things that occur to highways. What snows, we go remove the snow. What landslides, remove the dirt. Potholes occur, we remove the potholes. We don't always know where we're going to be doing maintenance from a day-to-day, or at least from a month-to-month perspective. Our accounting system breaks highway maintenance into over 150 activities. I think, Senator, I'm getting the sense of the frustration, and maybe not only to the Senator, but to the whole committee, is that I feel like we've got good accountability and maintenance. I feel like we do a good job of tracking what we do. We're getting better. We used to not be able to attribute things to specific highways, but we fixed that last year, and that continues to roll in. So now I can tell you how much I spent on any given highway. But the problem is that in these 150 activities, it's not clear to very many people what we would be doing when we're doing one of those activities. And so we give you a bunch of numbers, and you say, well, okay, I got a bunch of numbers. What do they mean? So what I've done for this presentation, and this matches up, hopefully not coincidentally, I hope this was planned, but it happens to match up with the areas in the program budget. And so I'm going to go through each of these areas and try and give you an idea, and I will try to, as I go through this, I will try and describe what would be done under preservation or modernization that's not done under maintenance. So the first area is roadway service maintenance, and it consists of these four things. Pothole patching, I think pretty clearly, as you drive down a roadway and you see a pothole being repaired, it's pretty easy to think of that as a maintenance activity. What I call small area patching, roads will crack in a, you know, there'll be a bunch of cracks in one small area. and you try and if you don't get those cracks covered or somehow sealed, you get water under pavements, and water under pavements is a very bad thing to happen, because if it's under a pavement, it wants to go to the, seems to want to go to the top, and pretty soon there's no more pavement left. So we do some smaller area patching. Again, I think this one, if you drive down the road, this is going to be pretty clearly a maintenance activity. Seals are, you see them, you probably, the most graphic ones that you can probably see are the ones you've seen in parking lots, where you're going to a parking lot one day and it'll look kind of gray and maybe a little bit broken up, and you go in there a week later or something and it looks black with nice bright stripes on it. That's a type of seal that is, it's not, it's similar to one we use on highways. It's not exactly the same. But the idea behind the seal, again, is to keep water from getting down into the subspace, the bottom portions of the pavement structure. Let me tell you, in a pavement structure, it's not just the top surface. There's a top surface at a minimum. There's a top surface, there's a base, and there's the subbase, which is the ground on which the pavement rests. And many times that subbase is treated before you put down a base, which is often gravel, and then the top surface. So again, the seal is to protect water from getting down in there, and it's also to improve the skid or resistance characteristics on a roadway. Sometimes roadways get kind of slick, and that seal is one way to remedy that problem. Overlays is probably the most, going to be the most difficult to distinguish from between preservation and maintenance. The difference is generally our overlays are a little bit thinner than preservation overlays. They're non-structural, but you're not going to be able to tell that driving down the road. I think the biggest difference is that in a maintenance overlay, you're going to tend to see a smaller operation. One paver, maybe one or two rollers. Where in a construction project, you may see more than one paver, a line of trucks, a lot more production.
Can I ask you, when do you determine between what is federal funds, what is T21 money, as an example, and general fund appropriation out of the gas and waste and all tax? When do you make the discernment on where those monies go? Because one could be used on preservation, one could be used on modernization, but probably not on maintenance unless it was the waste mile tax. So who makes the definition, and how much review or oversight are we going to have in our committee here?
Sure, Hannah, the federal government makes that definition, and the definition basically, at least in terms of pavement, is that unless the treatment is, it has a, I believe it's a life of, an expected life of at least 7 years, maybe eight, I can't remember for sure, but if the treatment has a life, an expected life of 7 or 8 years, it becomes eligible for federal funds. Well, generally, maintenance activities are not eligible for federal funds. So it's, again, I use the word structural overlay. It's an overlay with some meat to it that's intended to do more than just patch an existing problem. It's intended to actually extend the life at least 7 or 8 years. And at that point, then it becomes eligible for federal money.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make sure it's clear. A week from today, we'll have a significant discussion of flexible funds and our handout on that subject, and maybe go into that more detail about federal funds.
That's fine. Representative Patrick?
I just want to know why we even make the distinction between preservation and maintenance. It's such a gray area. But I think the answer was about the use of funds and federal funds. So my question was an answer, I guess. Or I even got to it.
Thank you.
I like it when I get to them before we get there. Okay, let's talk about roadside maintenance now. And Senator, I think that really the confusion between these categories is going to be relatively limited to that one issue. I think what I'm going to talk about the rest of maintenance here is going to be things that as you drive down the highway, you'd be thinking, well, that's probably maintenance. I think that might be the one sticking point or the one difficult point.
Thank you, Representative Patrick.
want to go back to the maintenance preservation issue. To me, is it safe to assume when you're talking, when we're here talking about maintenance versus preservation, and we're talking about any project in particular, are you going to use that federal definition of 7 or 8 years? Is that what you use for both for preservation for both state highway dollars and federal dollars? Or is it, I'm just trying to get it to fit. I think that that's part of the issue.
Chair Hannon, Representative Patridge, I think that there, I'm not positive about this, but I would bet that there are probably some 100% state-funded preservation overlays. They're eligible for federal funds, but we don't have enough federal funds to put them down there, so we're doing them with 100% state funds. I don't know. Given T21, I'm not positive about that. We have done that in the past, though.
Good. Question of clarification. But what I'm asking is, if we're talking to ODOT, and we're asking if it's a preservation project, no matter how it's paid for, either out of state highway funds or federal funds, are we using that same 7 or 8 year definition for preservation?
Chair Hannah, Representative Patrick, that would be correct. That would be how we would distinguish. We would say if it's eligible to be federalized, we would call it a preservation project.
No matter if we use state.
That's right. Federal. As long as it's eligible.
That helps clear up a lot.
Okay.
You might want to include that definition when you do a presentation of
the helpful.
Another question, Doug. Seeing the lady Oregon City here, we've got to make that work for money. So
counties, I believe. Yeah.
Back from the county?
Yes.
Oh, well, let's do a county explanation then. What happens where the county or the city goes to the state highway division? Currently in Southern Oregon, Ashland is trying to take over maintenance and upkeep on Highway 99 going through Ashland. My question is, Ashland only wants it if provided it be brought up to the city code or definition. How many jurisdictions are we currently involved in other areas of the state? And are those going to be called maintenance, preservation, or modernization?
I'm sorry, Senator, bringing it up to the standard?
Yeah, like, I live in Ashland, and Ashland says, we won't accept the state highway. We want the state highway, but we won't accept it unless they do the standard. Which one of the three is that definition?
Probably, and not knowing, and not remembering specifically the condition of that highway down there, it's probably preservation. It could be modernization. What you're describing has gone on in several places, and one in Salem is on South Commercial, used to be a state highway, and that was a modernization. We actually added a lane to it. I'm not sure in the case of 99 down there whether, I don't know enough about what the city's asking for, I guess, to tell you.
I was just trying to define what the difference is, because I think John Q. Public, I'm beginning to realize now my colleagues, they've been asking a lot of these basic questions, but I think the public attends a STIP meeting, as an example, and thinks that they might be there to talk about maintenance, preservation, or modernization, and you're talking about new projects and the priorities that they have. And so I think this whole process needs to be built upon, improved upon, so that when John Q. Public goes to a STIP meeting, he or she understands exactly what they're there to testify for. Something may be a new construction to you, but it may be a modernization to the person who testified, or it may be a combination of modernization and preservation to a person. And so, I don't know. Hopefully I'm conveying. This is some of the frustrations I heard from some of my colleagues that
we want to help you get to that point, but it's kind of like three shells here. Which one has the pea? And I understand where you're coming from. I have a better understanding looking at these things here this morning for the first time because you have these different categories. Senator Duke.
And to make it worse, Mr. Chair, on any given project, you could be doing two or three of these. I mean, as long as you're adding the lane, you know, you might be out there doing something with the shoulders or some other section that that needed to be done as long as you're there. And so they may have two or three categories in there. I don't think the public's got a chance of understanding anything more than my roads are in good shape or my roads aren't, or how come you laid the asphalt that cracked so badly right after you laid it. I think that's the best, and it's that you've hit on a big problem as far as people going to ODOT and saying, how come you're not fixing my roads? And they come back and say, because we're doing preservation and maintenance. I don't care what you call it. How come you're not fixing my roads?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. The differentiation we make, and Senator Dukes is exactly right. I mean, a modernization project may go across a bridge, and you say, why wouldn't you call it a bridge project? We do it on the largest portion of the work. We characterize the project based on the largest portion of the driving reason for work. But Senator Dukes is exactly right. Projects quite commonly are going to encompass a number of the programs that you're seeing here. Modernization projects are often going to improve safety. Hopefully they don't not improve it. So, or hopefully nothing we do doesn't improve safety somewhat. At least if it doesn't make it any better, it doesn't make it any worse. So there are those aspects in each one of the projects we do.
And Mr. Chair, just to give context, hopefully what we've done with the program budget when we separate these out is to try to help with the process, especially with the funding committee here, but also internally within the legislature and other areas. We used to have the budget that didn't separate these out, and the concern was you're not laying out clearly where the money is going within construction, within maintenance, within the overall highway program, and that's why we have the 10 categories. And moving to that this time, we're all dealing with some new definitions and with some more specificity that hasn't existed before. So in that process, I can understand that there's some confusion, but we're hoping that by having that specificity for at least the funding process, we can help communicate what is in within each one of those areas in terms of dollars. I don't think when we're out talking in the STIP public process, getting comments from the public, that we're emphasizing the separate program areas. We're trying to get information that Senator Dukes has about what you need and not trying to necessarily spend a lot of time defining each one of our program areas yet because of this confusion. But for the funding process, hopefully it does make some sense to talk through the detail about how much we have.
I think that raises a point that Mike, I'm beginning to have probably a better understanding here this morning than I've had all session what we're trying to obtain as far as information. But it still somewhat leads me to the fact that like a region, let's take a region in Southern Oregon, Closeburg's regional office. How do you make an assessment to do, whether it's maintenance, modernization, or whatever, in Coos County as an example? If you work on the bridge, it's modernization. If you work on the approach to the bridge, it's maintenance. And how would a person find out if a lay person walked into ODOT headquarters this morning and said, I'm from Coos Bay and I'd like to know how much ODOT is spending on the Coast Highway and the bridge going over the bay there in Coos Bay. How much is actually being spent? Can I trace it back?
Joe Hammond, I think without a doubt, you can find out how much is actually being spent on that project. If you walked in and asked me that question today, I'd have to go look to see if it was a what's called a construction project in our vernacular, is it a bridge or a pres project, or whether it's maintenance. But once I knew that, I could find out what that piece of work was costing us.
And it gives an estimate on how much is labor, how much is materials, how much is...
In the case of maintenance, yes, because we track it by labor, equipment, and materials. In the case of a contract, it's just a contractor, and we don't ask the contractor to break down labor and equipment and materials. It's just a contract cost to us.
So if you have a contract with somebody for $3 million, it's just a contract you have with them for $3 million, there's no stipulation on what they have to provide for $3 million?
Well, the end result, what they have to provide is specified real clearly, but they don't have to account for it by labor, equipment, and materials. And, you know, they have to, if we contract to rebuild the bridge in, they have to rebuild the bridge in, and they have to do it according to these specifications.
Okay.
But we don't tell them, we try not to tell contractors how to do it. We try and leave that up to them.
Mr. Chair, make sure we're clear. We specify the outcome that's needed. We don't specify the input. It's in a competitive process, and we do see when the competitive process comes in and they show how they expect the money to go, we see that, to see labor materials and that kind of information and their bid information that comes in. But we do not see, once they go into the project, they do not report to us individual expenditures to show how it's going. They show us the outcomes and what they're accomplishing for us, if that answers your question.
Yep. All right.
All right, let's go on to the second, if we've worn out pavement surface or road surface, we'll go on to the second item, which is roadside maintenance. And this is, in this presentation, when I did this for the efficiency committee, I think I was trying to explain the questions you're asking is what is encompassed in maintenance. And so you have a number of things in roadside maintenance I think, almost all equal importance. The first one of those is shoulder blading. If you don't recognize the word blading, it's not in any spell checker that I've ever found. But essentially, this is the process of going and smoothing out shoulders. One of the most dangerous things that you can have is at the edge of a pavement surface. If there's a drop-off, if there's any drop-off at all, it's dangerous. If there's a drop-off of more than a couple of inches, then it's very dangerous, because a car straying from the pavement surface and dropping a wheel over that, if you drop a wheel over more than a 2-inch drop-off, you're very likely to lose control of the car. The car will jerk suddenly. Usually driver response is to try and go like this and pull it back on. Usually an overcorrection, and you've got a car that's out of control. So a term that's, I guess, not a lay term, shoulder blading, but it's smoothing out the shoulders and filling in so there aren't drop-offs, so that the edge of the pavement goes smoothly onto the shoulder. Vegetation control, there's two reasons listed here. There's actually a third that I'll try and describe. The first two are pretty clear. You keep roadsides free of noxious weeds. This is not only... You want to stop noxious weeds from spreading, because they can go into agricultural areas and so forth if they're not controlled on roadsides. And you also want to maintain sight distance. If you're going around a corner, this isn't usually obvious unless you have been on a road where if you've driven down a farm road where there's corn growing, and you'll notice that as you drive by through July, that you can see, as you approach a corner, you can see all the way around that corner. And then in August, all of a sudden, you can't see around that corner anymore. And so that's sort of a description as I can get is what maintaining sight distance is also making sure that guardrail isn't hidden and that signs aren't hidden. And there's a third reason for vegetation control, and that again goes back to the water under the pavement. As I described, there's a top surface and then there's a gravel layer. And that base, what's called the pavement base, you want that to drain so you get water out of it. And if you have vegetation growing up at the edge of pavements, the roots block the drainage of that second layer. And that creates a very, again, very bad condition in terms of pavement wear. Sweeping is another activity we perform under the category of roadside maintenance. And here we're removing debris from roadways, curbs, bike paths. This is can be a real it's an aesthetic, but it's also a safety issue, that there's a lot of stuff out there on roadways, sanding material, particularly in the winters. We do a lot of work to remove sanding material. Litter removal is primarily an aesthetic activity, removing debris. And removing debris, if you have the perfect roadway is a road where there's nothing that you can hit anywhere near. You drop off the edge of the pavement and you go down the slope of the shoulder for a while and you don't run into anything. That's a good road from an engineering standpoint. So removing litter is important so you're not running over things if you do stray from the roadway.
Senator Diggs.
Now, how much of that last one comes out of the license plate? Specialty license plate.
Joanne and Senator Dukes is referring to what's called the Environmental Quality Fund, which is subsidized or built from the sale of customized license plates. Senator, we don't pay for ODOT forces out of that money. The statute directs that money primarily to youth activities, so that's primarily youth litter patrol that you're discussing or describing. We also do adopt a highway out of that, too. I can get you the exact number that we spend on that those activities.
Okay.
But that's it. We do fund primarily youth litter and adopt a highway out of the Environmental Quality Fund.
How do those compare, what you pay for litter removal and what we're paying for the kids in the highway?
Chair Hammond, Senator Dukes, I think we're paying just maybe a smidge over minimum wage for the kids on the highway, so they're relatively cheap. We've also started to look at using as a county work program some juvenile delinquent type people. We've got some food that counties have come out and said we need some community service for these people to do, and I don't know that we're picking up very much of that cost at all. So that's the least expensive way is to adopt a highway and use litter. That's our preferred method. It's better than having our crews out there when they could be out doing maintenance. We do use our crews. We use prison crews as well for this that are not funded out of the Environmental Quality Fund. In the real high hazard locations, we don't want to turn. We don't turn adopt the highway people or use litter loose in real high hazard areas. Keep them up middle of a urban freeway would be a. So we do use litter and adopt the highway off to the sides when you're off in the grass over there, but when we get kind of close to the road with a lot of people moving, we consider that to be a little too risky to put people.
Put our prisoners out there?
No. Well, we do put our prisoners out there, yeah. Sometimes it's highway crews.
This is a social decision here?
It is sometimes highway crews that are out and we pick up the list of them.
How much money is that to spend on the litter removal where the people volunteer to take a section of a mile, like they do so much public service activity? Is the state monitoring that by spending money to have somebody out there monitor it? Or
no, Chair Hammond, all we spend on that, I think I can get that number for you. The expenditures for Adopt the Highway are, we put up a sign. It says adopt the highway in recognition of who's done it, so there's a cost. And then we pick up the bags. They adopt the highway volunteers will come in and they'll pick up the litter and they'll leave the bags. And so our expense is those two things on that program. There's nothing. We have a training video we give them. We don't necessarily put on classes. They come to a if you're an adopt the highway group, you'd come to a district office and you'd say, I'm going to go out and pick up litter on such and such a section, and we provide some signing and some vests for them to take out. It's on a loan basis to take out with them. But there's not much ODOT cost in about the highway.
What happens if a person doesn't pick up for a period of time? Is there a way to remove that relationship?
Chairman, yes, there are. There's specifications, depending on the section of roadway, about the number of times a year they have to pick it up, and if they don't pick it up, then many times they haven't complied with their agreement and they're not part of the program.
Senator Yee.
I have a question on snow and ice control. Thing is, we don't have very much snow and ice in the state. It just seems to me our snow and ice service, the road service, is kind of slow because one January morning, 9 o'clock in the morning, I was on I-5 and on the slope of Anthony Hill, and all the cars couldn't move up and couldn't back up because of ice. Now, at 8:30, I asked my husband, is it safe to go on the highway to go to Salem? He said it's very safe between Albany and downtown. But on the highway, the same truck has not been there by 9 o'clock, and all the traffic was jammed. I mean, is this because your snow and ice control is not accustomed to the icy weather? Or why is it so slow?
I'm sure Hannah's telling you.
It's just one incident.
I would hope that's just one incident. We're trying to get better at using what's called anti-icers that keep ice from forming. And what the thing is, those anti-icers are fairly expensive, and so you don't like to just go put them down when you don't think there's going to be a reason that you might need anti-icers. And the morning that you're talking about in January, I remember relatively well, we didn't expect it to freeze. And we certainly didn't expect it to freeze with moisture around. And so we got caught by an unexpected event. The reason it was slow is that it happened on every road in the valley, and so we were out. Sanding is of marginal value on a thin ice. Sanding's really valuable.
A little sanding would help a lot because nobody could move. Everybody was kind of frozen. You can't go up and go down.
Senator Yee, it's sanding's if you've got something for the sand to bite into, it'll stay on the roadway. If you don't have anything for the sand to bite into, it leaves the roadway pretty quickly. And if you follow a truck or a car going with any speed over a sanded roadway, the sand is moving off to the side of the roadway pretty quick. So it's an area where we try and use anti-icing chemicals rather than sand. And that was, but to go back to your basic question, I hope that was an isolated incident. It happens once in a while. We get an unexpected weather occurrence that I don't think generally we're in too bad a shape. We don't get as much snow in the valley. We do in the mountains where we're very prepared for snow.
That was a very terrifying experience.
Yeah, it's not one, I remember it, and it's not one that we want to repeat or that we enjoyed having happen at all.
Okay, if you want to continue, please.
Okay. Also under roadside maintenance, some of the things maybe that aren't as apparent is that there are fence maintenance. The fences that run along access control highways have to be maintained. There's landscape maintenance. Landscaping is, you say, why do you maintain landscaping? Well, if we put it in the third bullet down there under landscape maintenance, we put in landscaping with federal money. The federal government requires us to maintain it, which is the case with anything we do with federal money.
I wasn't there for the last meeting of the efficiency committee, so I don't know if it fell off the list or not, but the report that went, the pre-final report from the efficiency committee was, if a community wants landscaping, let them put it in themselves. It seemed to me that was partly a cost-saving effort, but also that the maintenance was there as well.
Chair Hannon, Senator Dukes, I think that if we were to avail ourselves in the community of federal dollars to put in that landscaping, that maybe you, I thought the way the recommendation came out is if they want landscaping, then let them maintain it, not necessarily let them pay for it.
Well, I don't know, like I said, I don't know what the final thing was, but in all of the discussions, it was, there was an example of one of the bend bypasses where they put in native rock, and our response was, in my part of the state, they just spray the rock so it's nice. You know, I mean, it's just, and how much does that add to a project when you're bringing in special materials that maybe we could make money go further if we just did the project? And then if a community wanted the special rock and they wanted the rose bushes, then they could do something. They could contribute the money to get that and then also do the maintenance. I mean, I haven't driven down to Lincoln City recently, so I don't know.
Better.
The dash is still going. It's better. Okay.
It's better.
Well, they tried to use a bed tax over there at Lincoln City to fund road work a few years back.
What tax?
Bed tax.
You mean motel tax?
Motel tax. Hotel. Mm-hmm. The mayor of Lincoln City, I think, came over to testify on it. I told him all he needed to do was throw a few mattresses in there and he could fill the hole with asphalt. So didn't need a bed tax.
Certainly, Senator Duke's a valid, I think, a valid strategy to pursue. Finally, under roadside maintenance, not finally under roadside maintenance, but also we keep rest areas open, safety rest areas open. We also have within maintenance the ADA program, and that's building curb cuts and ramps to make sidewalks accessible. Mailbox supports, there's we have a program to replace dangerous mailbox supports, and this is nearly complete now. There's just a few places in the state where we haven't finished this, but one of the most dangerous things in the world is what we used to call a two-rail mailbox, and it's the one that had two posts and a board across the two posts and the mailboxes across the top of the board. And what would happen if a car struck that first post, that the board that held the mailboxes was still supported by the second post, and it would come right through the car, right through the front windshield. The most dangerous thing in the world. And so we went, didn't feel like you could go out and load that onto the people who put the mailboxes up there with good intention. So we had a mailbox support program. It's like $75,000 a year or something to go around and replace those dangerous mailboxes. And hazardous tree removal, when you find trees that are imminent of coming down, we need to go in and take them out before they fall and close the road. The next category, I'm not sure I'm going down the order of the program budget, but I'll go to, in the order of this presentation. The next category is traffic services, and this is a really, really broad category that covers pavement marking, and that's all the striping, all the pavement striping you see, including what we call legends, which are the left turn arrows, crosswalks, all that stuff is called legends. The other stuff is called just lane lines. And pavement markers, the shiny things that you see around the state. Signs, sign maintenance is cleaning, repairing, and replacing signs. Again, differentiated, I think, from preservation. A preservation project, you might go in and say, we need new signs or something here in maintenance. We're generally going to be replacing signs that have failed.
Yesterday, coming back from Medford, down at the end of the Willamette Valley, down towards Roseburg, he had a crew out painting their freeway yesterday. It was a private company. Are you getting away from in-house painting and going to private companies to do striping for you?
Chair Hannon, yeah, we're trying that. This is the, I believe, the third year that our interstate striping contract has been privatized.
Is there a certain given time that they have to operate under? Because I'll be real candid with you, yesterday the traffic was packed up, being Sunday, Mother's Day, and whatever else, and paint truck going down the middle of the freeway striping, or doing the broken lines.
Yeah.
And so you had cars backed up, and rather than doing that in the evening or morning or some other time when the traffic flow might not be so heavy.
Well, Chair Hannon, the problem with striping is that you've got some critical factors. Yes, there are. I mean,
you know, it has to be a certain temperature
and not that much humidity. Right. So that, in this time of the year, that may be a little restrictive. It's getting so cold. But, there are provisions in there. Probably we didn't get Mother's Day, but I think in that contract we have a provision that says they can't stripe after 3 o'clock Friday on Memorial Day weekend until the weekend. So we do have some provisions for holidays, and apparently missed Mother's Day, though. How bad was it backed up?
About a mile and a half. Just slow speed, about 25 miles an hour on the freeway.
Okay.
And it's kind of hard on my left foot.
Won't help to have 75 mile an hour speed limit if we get traffic tied up.
Yeah, right.
traffic signals, I think we're up to, and that traffic signal maintenance is replacing burned out lamps on traffic signals, signal controllers, traffic signal loops, and then paying for the electricity to operate the signals, which is not a small sum of money. Although we're doing things to limit that as well, there's a technology, LED, if you remember, maybe your clocks still have in your bedside clock, but the numbers that light up, those are called LEDs, and I can't remember what the acronym stands for. But we found that you can cut the power requirements significantly by using LEDs instead of iridescent bulbs. And so almost all of the red lights in the state have been replaced with LEDs. They show up a little bit better and they cost a heck of a lot less. When we're working on doing green, we did red first because they're on the most. We're working on doing green next, but the folks that do the manual and uniform traffic control devices can't decide what color green is, so we're still waiting for that. Illumination, similar to traffic signals, it's replacing burnout bulbs, photocells, and again, paying for electricity. And then also included in traffic services are barriers. All of the guardrail, all of the concrete barrier that you see, whenever that stuff gets hit, needs to be repaired. Delineators are the site posts that are off to the sides of roadways, and those need to be cleaned or replaced. And there's also hazard markers. So a hazard marker you see at a bridge end, at an unprotected, you won't see them on the freeway, I hope, but at some bridge ends that don't have adequate guardrail protection, there you'll see a post that's black and white, or black and yellow striped post this way. There's a right way and wrong way, right? Snow and ice control, kind of self-explanatory. I got into what we're doing with anti-ices a little bit. It's been very, very effective. People now are driving in situations where Senator Yee had one that we didn't get to, but in a lot of other cases, you could be driving on a highway that normally would have ice on it and doesn't because we're using anti-icing chemicals. I have some pictures from the Willamette Pass that are just, you can see there's ice on right on the edges, right outside the fog line at the edge of the pavement, but the pavement is clear of ice.
Senator Yee.
Thank you. So, following up my question previously, so if all the roads are icing at the same time, how do you get there right away? If you get there too late, it doesn't help. So, how do you do that?
Chair Hammond, Senator Yee, what we try and do with the anti-ices is we try and put them down before it freezes. These are effective. If it doesn't rain, you can put down an anti-icer and it'll be effective for about a week to stop ice from forming. So, yeah, on a night when we would be expecting ice to form, we would go around and put down anti-icer in the places we expected ice to form. So that's how we get there. We wouldn't wait until after it happened. We'd try and get out there before it happened.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Another question. So you have to depend on good weather forecast?
Chair Hammond, Senator Yee, yeah, we do, and we've... in different parts of the state. We depend on weather forecasts. We're also starting to put in pavement sensors in the pavement that tell you what the temperature of the pavement is and what the moisture dew point and those kinds of things are. There's a technique that it requires a lot of information. Once we get it in place, we believe we'll be able to model and determine when pavements are going to freeze. A number of states are using that. It's been pretty effective. So we use some real localized, specialized weather reports, and then we use this.
Another question, Mr. Chairman. Follow-up question.
Yes, please.
So is this the so-called Blue Star?
No, Chair Hannon, Senator Yee, that Blue Star thing was a device that was on a site post or a delineator that I just talked about. Which told you what the temperature of the air was and was not closely related to what the temperature of the pavement was.
So you have something in the pavement
identify. Yes. It's an electronic sensing device that is read remotely.
So it tells you its temperature?
Yes.
And moisture content?
Yes.
Oh, and you can do it the night before?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting. This is all over the state.
Yes, we're using this everywhere in the state.
Okay, Senator Dukes.
does the public know if you've sprayed the pavement? I mean, it seems to me that traffic's going to slow down because black pavement, black ice, you assume, well, there's no gravel on it, that it's icy. How do they know?
Chair Hammond, Senator Dukes, they don't know. My advice is that if you're driving in inclement weather, that you drive slowly and you have to judge whether or not you've got adequate traction. It's sort of, we put it down there. I think there are some cases when you can see frost on the roadsides and there's not frost on the road. But in the case of the black ice, there's no way for the public to tell that we've put that down there or how much of it's left.
Okay. We have approximately about 15 minutes more. The Senate convenes at 9:40.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the odd minute is, but why they didn't make it 9:39 or something. But anyway, we're meeting at 9:40, so Doug, if you could kind of shorten up a little bit here on the briefing this morning.
Sure, and I can cover, Senator, what I'd like to do is I've got three sections left.
Okay. For
structure maintenance, and let me just cover that quickly. So
that's okay.
All of the maintenance that you do on bridges, and we've enumerated all of those things. Sorry if I was boring you.
On bridge inspection and bridge maintenance, the bridges in Portland, were those some ODOT monies that were used on the restoration of some of the bridges there?
Which Chair Hannon, which bridges?
I don't know.
Hawthorne Bridge.
The Hawthorne Bridge?
Yeah.
That was a local, that bridge is on the county, and it was maintained by Multnomah County, and it's on the, it's not ODOT money.
So it would be like a freeway bridge?
No, our bridges up there are, we have the St. John's, the Markham, the Fremont, I'm sorry, we have the Ross Island, hi Grace, we have the Ross Island, the Markham, the Fremont, and the St. John's, I did that right, St. John's Bridge.
Okay.
Four bridges that we have up in, that are ODOT bridges in Portland.
So those are the state highways that go through all those bridges?
Yes.
Okay.
The others are maintained by Multnomah County.
I see, okay.
Bridge maintenance is a little bit different because you're working on a bridge, but yet similar in the sense that we're going out and repairing problems that have happened similar to what you would do in pavement. Also, the one thing I might note on that is that we have movable bridge operations. We do have a couple of drawbridges on the state system.
Senator Dukes.
Well, I was just curious. I saw an article not too long ago indicating somebody's belief that ODOT's, any kind of inspector perhaps, that ODOT's bridge inspection program was inadequate to really detect what's going on there. I think it was in the wake of the tunnel collapse. So maybe it's tunnels I'm talking about.
I'm sure how it's going to do, I think it was related to tunnels. I don't think anyone's
prepared. Do you have a response to that? I mean, I don't mean right now, but has ODOT prepared an official response to that tunnel inspection?
I don't know that it's been completed yet, but we're addressing the issues that were raised in that report. Drainage, this is keeping ditches so water flows, keeping culverts clean, and keeping erosion down. And finally, incidents and emergencies, which is the response portion, cleaning up accidents, or responding to extraordinary events. So what I've tried
If I could ask you about the accident cleanup and repair, there was a bill that was in Senate Transportation, it's now down here, and the Towers Association is extremely concerned that they're called out to the scene of an accident. They're responsible for removing the vehicle, whether it's a truck or a small passenger car or whatever, from the scene. Part of the problem that they're concerned about and want to see addressed is there may in fact be or may not be toxic substance, and not always is the first responder, i.e. the state police, county, or city, know that it's a potentially toxic substance. So the tower cleans everything up, puts the rags and everything in the wrecked vehicle, tows it back to their yard, and then along comes DEQ or somebody else and says, you've improperly disposed of potentially toxic substance here. So they're being cited for these kind of conditions of not disposing properly of potentially toxic substance. And they have a bill in. I'm trying to decide how to phrase this. Who would make the determination when is it appropriate to call in a toxic disposal unit and when is it not? And how is there an open chain of command? Because I think it's very valid. One of the wrecked vehicles that one of the Tories was describing was a vehicle where the emergency response team from the medics put the syringe and rags with blood and everything just threw it inside the vehicle. Well, then that's all toxic substance according to disposal, and it has to be placed in a separate category, and these stores are being exposed to all this stuff. So I guess what I'm trying to find out is who has the chain of command and how do we know that it works? Because apparently something's breaking down.
Chair Hammond, this is a relatively new problem because it's gotten into the, I guess I'd call it minor or vehicular accidents as opposed to commercial vehicle accidents. And if you go dump a truckload of diesel or something, we're going to be out there and call in DEQ and hazardous material people to go mitigate the whatever concern is out there. Right now on the current law, the towers are required to remove the stuff, remove whatever's out there from the roadway. And we're having similar problems with spills from accidents that we might get out to. We tend to go on ones where you're going to find a lot of material leaking, like a tanker truck. And we discovered through some advice from OSHA that we were not authorized to what's called plug and patch. We've got some training now for our guys, so we can do what I can't remember the term, but we can put booms out and stuff like that. But we aren't authorized to do a lot of the things that we were doing, and I think the tollers are running into the same problem. It's not the chain of command that you're asking about in an incident command strategy when you have a major spillage, like a tanker truck going over. That's pretty clear. And there's somebody on the scene that's designated the incident commander, but I don't believe that happens at most traffic accidents, and I'm not sure I would know how to make that happen because there's so many relatively small accidents where there's some fluid spilled. I'm sympathetic to the towers' plight on this. It's a tricky problem. They're required to do something, and I don't know whether the requirements got tighter or exactly what's causing the problem.
But well, I think they received legal advice that potentially they could be held liable for moving a substance from an accident scene and then being held further liable if they didn't dispose of it.
Chair Hannon, we have the same problem actually. If the responsibility for that cleanup were to move to the ODOT or to the counties or to the cities are a little bit better prepared because they have the fire departments that have more than we have. But it would be a very expensive thing for us. We're not authorized to do it either. So we'd be having a contractor go out and do the cleanup and then haul the stuff out if it were not the towers. So it's not something that we can just pick up in the way we're organized now. And then we don't respond to many, many accidents as well.
Mr. Chair, maybe we can help with some facilitation of the issue with DEQ.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just I'm getting a mixed signal from a lot of people dealing with ODOT. They're wanting to see something, but they're not quite certain. They know what they want it to look like, but they're not quite certain the ingredients necessary to get to that end product.
Maybe we can talk with the chair offline and see if we can help.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
We've actually been meeting with them.
Mr. Chairman, I think it would be very helpful to understand the chain of command. As Chairman said, when in case of an accident, whose responsibility it is to remove the...
Are there people on call, like a maintenance person would be on call to respond, and the police go down the telephone line, and then that person has access to a management person above them, and somewhere somebody's a decision maker, a policy maker?
Well, Chair Hannon, again, it depends on the type of accident. And a lot of the ones I think the tollers are most concerned about is the majority of the accidents, and we don't even get called for those. We have people on call that the state police, if there's an accident on the freeway, the state police have a call list, and we have people that are notified that they'll be called if there's an accident on the freeway. And they can get to me or whoever, they can get to the region maintenance person or the region engineer or myself, depending on who they need to talk to about what the situation is. But those are normally major sorts of situations. We don't get called out on this minor stuff. We never respond.
No, I wasn't talking about the minor. I'm going to give an example. Medford has a freeway right over the top of it. What happens if there's a major truck semi go through the center of concrete guardrail and strikes another disc on the other side, and a substantial wreck, substantial toxic substance? There's no way to approach it from the south. There's no way to approach it from the north because it's four lanes over the top of the city. And what happens as far as getting people on the scene and addressing it and evacuating even? I mean, there's houses underneath the freeway. It's incredible what you had down there.
In that case, we do have it's substantial, but we have an emergency response manual. And what would happen in the case of that you're describing is actually the key point in the it's all a matter of levels of how severe it is. But in the severity that you're talking about, the County Emergency Operations Center would go into operation. And they essentially they become the coordination point for, and we're resources for them. And we might have somebody on the scene, but it's the County Emergency Operations Centers that are the control points when you have a situation, when you're getting into an evacuation or something like that. That Emergency Operations Center is going to activate, and they're going to be the coordination point.
And Mr. Chair, there should be a local hazmat team that would respond to whatever oil, gasoline, chemicals, things that are coming out.
That's called an urban area. Some of the rural areas.
They have them.
So,
now, they might be 50 miles away.
Yeah.
But they have them.
That's a fine answer. Yeah. Okay.
I hope I got close to what you're asking for.
Yeah, no, I think this is fine.
Preservation.
Are you going to bring back something tomorrow and kind of show us a closer definition of what we're trying to get at with this zero-based budgeting and these 5% increments?
Sure, the other handout will address that.
This one here that you gave us today?
That should give you the base, that gives you the baseline and the impact, and then the handout that's been prepared when we started this whole thing goes up in increments, and what really gets restored, what got taken away in that first
handout. Okay. Does LFO have any questions or comments to make to the committee?
No, Mr. Chair, I'll have to look this over. It would be better if you showed the activity and then the cost of the incremental
loan. It's actually in there. It's on the back of your, I think it's on the back of your package. There's the GDD package cost of detail. Do you have that page? Okay, we'll get to that.
Well, we're trying to find it.
Oh, okay.
No.
We'll get to that. Does the committee have that?
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, it must be secret.
we'll make an suggestion.
Memory is VDD levels.
Yeah, that's just the one that's there on the top. It'll say
summary of ZBB levels and service level packages, central services.
Okay, that'll be when we get to that either late tomorrow or whenever. But there's one also for maintenance.
Yes, there's and John tells me that the cost detail sheet did not go out, but that has
okay.
What you asked for.
Okay. So you can get that to staff and then...
We'll do it right now.
Okay.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes, please.
I want to know why is your material presented in this manner? It's very difficult to read. All the readable words are inside the brush line.
Because it's colored in real... The original is colored.
Oh.
And when he ran it through the copy machine, it came out black.
Oh, because...
So it's not a deliberate attempt to deceive anybody. They had a different color.
I my apologies.
Poor design. So either give it to us in color or
sure.
Give it to
I'll print it out again.
Without
the color.
The
no problem.
Okay.
No problem.
If there's nothing else before us, we are going to be adjourned until 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. Is there anything else that we should be asking you for?
Mr. Chair, we'll come back with the detail that Doug discussed for maintenance, and we'll be ready to get into central services when you are
okay.
Tomorrow.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
The zero budgeting tomorrow?
Yes.
Yeah.
And are we planning to do all that all this week so we can...
Mr. Chair.
I think we have a work session, Wednesday or Thursday?
On Wednesday, we do have a work session. On Thursday, we'll be bringing ODOT housing and... economic development into talk on
the livability
initiative.
That's on Thursday?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then on Friday, you have housing work session. And on Monday, we come back for the whole week with ODOT.
And when do we conclude with ODOT?
Hopefully next week.
In the next week.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mr. Carroll, hand out some questions from our last hearing.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. So if there is nothing else before us, we are adjourned until 8 o'clock on Tuesday.